Money is a topic that they could be interested in. Time is a topic they could be interested in. Legacy, trust.
This is essentially their retirement, but for business owners, it's not a 401k rollover. If you want to know if you should sell this thing or not, I need to know how much money you're going to get.
I think it's worth $10 million. That's great, but I can't validate that under any of the three major metrics that are available. All right, well, let's look at the numbers and see what the numbers are saying.
You use the EBITDA metric, earnings before taxes, interest, depreciation, and amortization. You throw all those expenses in there and your cousin's cell phone bill, right, and your nephew's soccer practice, well, then that lowers your profit.
You might think that's what it's worth, but somebody else has to be on the other side of that trade.
Hey, I know it's valued at X, and therefore I've got to get X, right? And same thing with buyers. Buyers get educated quickly when they talk to a bank, and a bank tells them how the world works. Buyers are like, I'm going to give you this LOI where I don't pay anything up front, and the SBA is going to give me all this money because I saw a YouTube video, and they said that was possible. That's just not happening.
Welcome back to View from Above with John Berger and our absolute very first guest ever, Ryan Drake Lee, joining us today. We're trying something a little new today, Ryan, so you're the guinea pig. Good luck to you, brother.
Thanks for having me, guys. It's going to be a great conversation. I appreciate it.
So, John, as advisors, I loved the opportunity to work with business owners because they have so many different plates that they're spinning and so many different opportunities. Interestingly enough, a lot of the areas they need help with aren't really things that make financial advisors a whole lot of money traditionally, but they're really fun to kind of sink your teeth into from an analytics standpoint and just trying to add value. Not always in all cases, but a lot of times financial advisors are knowledgeable in a lot of areas, but not necessarily experts at the level that a client may need in a particular area.
Absolutely.
So we get opportunities to bring other folks in. And one of the really cool places for those paths to intersect is when a business owner reaches a decision point in their career or with their business that they have to decide, do they want to sell their business or not? That's where you can bring in a lot of different folks to the table there. But I wanted to start there. If I'm a, let's just paint a hypothetical picture here, John. So 65-ish year old, runs a nice successful business. They've hung their hat on this for 30 years and it's making $5 million a year. They've got 20, 30, 40 employees, a lot of people depending on them. Couple of kids that don't want to take over the business, or they don't have any kids, or whatever the reason may be, they don't really know who's gonna keep this business going into the future. They're at some point gonna reach out to you, I believe, first there and say, hey, I'm thinking about selling the business, or what are my options? I don't know if I want to sell the business. Should I sell the business? Talk us through there a little bit what that thought process looks like from an advisor standpoint, trying to help that individual make the smartest decision for their family and for their well-being. This is essentially their retirement, but for business owners, it's not a 401k rollover.
Not that simple, no, definitely not. Yeah, so the process, even, you know, you took one of the equation variables out, which is the kids. You know, normally speaking, when I'm approached by a business owner that's saying, you know, I'm closer to the end of this, of me in this business than I am the beginning, and they tend to think that their timetable is 2 to 3 years. That would be a very aggressive timetable, and it tends not to get the best results, but we just really started saying, all right, well, let's look at the business, let's understand what it is, and then start looking at the options. Option number one is you're just going to burn it out, and then when you retire, you're done, the business is done, you close the doors and, you know, liquidate the assets. And that certainly is an option, and every once in a while that is maybe the best option or the only option that's going to work in the timetable that the owner has. Another option is, well, do you have family that wants to continue, you know, whatever it is that this business is and what it means? Do you have extended family? Do you want to bring in an associate? Is that something that could work? Bringing in somebody so you work them up from the bottom up, and then there's some kind of takeover or transition plan. Another option is you don't find anybody that's going to be able to take it over, is one of the options to put it out there and make it so it's as sellable as possible, as worthwhile and valuable to somebody else, and understanding what that buyer is looking for, and go that option. And so we really want to assess and then go back to the owners, like, here are the various options and here's what they could mean for you from a overall remunerative standpoint, or for that 401k that isn't a 401k retirement standpoint. And which path do you feel like you want to pursue? And it's driven by the owner, their desire to leave a legacy, their timetable, so many different factors. And I just really try to help guide them through what that thought process is and how to scope it down to one or two paths that are really viable, and the others are, that's really not going to be anywhere near as good.
So it's interesting to me when you get to that crossroads as an individual, there's always from my experience with business owners, there seems to always be a little bit of a bias or a preference maybe to leave that business to someone else, to leave it to the kids, to keep the legacy going. Sometimes that's just not possible. And then at other times, there's just enough money offered that, I mean, I'm sorry, emotions do have a limit in a lot of situations that, hey, my legacy may be worth a lot to me, but there is a price on it in a lot of situations. So, but in either case, there's going to come a point in time where you've got to decide, okay, well, some of it does depend on the price. And if we're sitting down at retirement, if this were a traditional employee type situation, you're going to sit down, you're going to take inventory and you're going to figure out how much you have in assets. And now we're going to use that to determine, can we retire? Well, a business owner, it's not quite that simple. So that's where we insert someone like Ryan to the equation. And Ryan, I don't think we didn't do this earlier, but maybe give us just a quick little background on where you can help in that situation and kind of introduce your business and how you work with business owners as well.
Absolutely. Thanks for that, Garrett. I'm a strategic advisor to business owners, whether they be entrepreneurs who are at the beginning of building their business or they're, you know, established business owners who've been operating for many years. I focus on supporting them in strategy and operations centered topics, which, you know, for example, might be, you know, some cost reductions or takeouts, right? How to reduce cost. Often there are perceptions that profitability is not where they would like it to be, and there's a hypothesis about what's driving that, right? And I explore that topic with them and do some diagnostic problem solving and uncover what the real core issues are. And, you know, it may be organizational, it may be, you know, pricing related, it may be contract relations related, it may be, you know, kind of team management and roles and responsibility related. So that's just a couple of examples of my work as a strategic advisor. And the other hat that I wear is as a business broker, right? There's lots of synergies in working with business owners and helping them grow and achieve their business goals. And sometimes their business goals may be to exit or develop an exit strategy. And that's where I can come in as a business broker and support them in all the work that's required in order to actually, you know, complete an asset sale or a stock sale, right? So that process starts with understanding what the seller's goals are, right? As you just touched on, Garrett and John, right? Money is a topic that they could be interested in, right? Time is a topic they could be interested in, right? Legacy, you know, furthermore, trust, etc. These are all the factors that a business broker is going to want to understand, right? Through good conversation, quite frankly, posing smart questions, and really uncovering what's the goals of the business owner. It seems at the surface, right? Everybody's like, well, I want to sell for the highest price, you know, as fast as possible and get out. But, you know, further inquiry with them, right, with the seller, can usually uncover that there's a myriad of factors involved, right? Not only because, you know, individual business owner, their spouse, you know, maybe a part owner, but not really involved in the business, right? We see that a lot. You know, the husband's been running the business, the spouse is 50% owner, she plays no role. But when it comes to selling and exiting, aha. Now you have a stakeholder that you have to get alignment with, right? Especially, I operate in the state of California, and in the state of California, there's, you know, a fair amount of regulation around that. And so owners have to be involved in, one, listing the business, right? There's a form called the Entity Authorization Form. And before you can even put a business up for sale, right, all owners have to agree that it should be put up for sale. So that's just a little bit of tidbit, right? We will probably get into this stuff more deeply, but that's how I can be supportive and helpful to financial advisors, right, or any business owners that are, you know, nearing those kinds of decisions in their path.
We have an interesting little trio here because between the three of us, we have some overlapping interests in a lot of different ways, right? John and I have both worked as financial advisors. I also help financial advisors pursue potentially selling their business. John's not done that type of work. Ryan has helped folks sell their business and then has worked with some financial advisors on that. And then John and Ryan also do business consulting work. So we all kind of overlap in some ways, either past, present, or whatever the case may be. I know I've worked with financial advisors, you know, in our industry, it's, you pretty much know what a business is worth, but even you can get anywhere from 2x revenue to 6x revenue, depending on a lot of different nuances, and that's just within one industry. So what are some of the factors, Ryan, that are going to affect the valuation? Because that's something that John's going to want to know is, how much are you going to get for this business? If you want to know if you should sell this thing or not, I need to know how much money you're going to get from it.
How much?
Because you're selling your income stream for life. So what goes into that equation?
So that's a great question, right? The first thing is that, you know, as business brokers, the first curiosity that business owners have is how much can I get for this, right? So we start off generally with a valuation question, right? Is how much is it worth? It's tricky because as business brokers, right, you get a lot of, let's say, sellers who are essentially shopping, right? They're kind of shopping around business brokers or different advisors trying to find who gives them the highest number. Right. So, you know, once again, you've got to apply your, you know, your intelligence and your critical thinking, right, as you enter these discussions, because essentially they're beginning, they're the first step in a long-term negotiation, right, which is understanding and uncovering, right, the other party's needs and goals, right, and then finding a solution that works for all. But in valuation, right, you want to understand what's the cash flows of the business, right? It's basic cash flows. We use the EBITDA metric in business brokerage, right? For those that don't know, that's earnings before taxes, interest, depreciation, and amortization. It's basically, you know, how much money does the business make before accounting things have to take place. So you start with that number. But what goes into that number is not straightforward, right? Because what in that number, there includes very, you know, a number of operating line items, right? Costs that could be added back, right? Or not. We call these add backs. So when you're trying to determine the valuation, the EBITDA, you need to examine the P&L, right? You need to understand what add backs can go back. An example is officers' salaries and compensation, right? If officer takes a salary in the line item, that's a cost, right? It's a deduction from what the bottom line is from the profit. So you have to add that back because the seller, enjoys that. And so the buyer will enjoy that as their profit as well. So that's an add back. There are other operating things, you know, small business owners, everybody knows they're going to try to expense as much of their life as they can through the business. You know, we're all smiling here on screen because that's how we operate in the United States of America. And it's what smart business people do is you try to expense that. But remember, when it comes to figuring out your profitability, right? If you throw all those expenses in there and your cousin's cell phone bill, right? And your nephew's, you know, soccer practice because you've had a justification for why it was a business expense, well, then that lowers your profit. So it's a trade-off between how much taxes you pay, right, today, and how much you're eventually going to, you know, try to present your market, your business to the market in terms of its profitability, right? It's hard. That's why people, you know, they say you can't have your cake and eat it too. If you throw all your expenses in there, it's going to make your profit look low, which you might like because you pay less taxes. But when you go to sell it, same thing. It makes your profit look low. And therefore, a buyer is going to be interested in how much profit does it make. And that's where you end up in discussions around what are the line items that need to get added back. And quite frankly, right, what I generally share with all my clients, whether they be buyers or sellers, right, is that essentially what you're buying is, right, it's a set of activities in exchange for a cash flow. Right. And it's just like a job description. Right. Just think about it. In a regular job, you have a job description. Right. There's bullet points on what your qualifications should be and what your responsibilities are. Right. Those are things that you will be held accountable for. And in exchange for that, you get a salary. It's fixed. Right. In business ownership, you have, you know, the profit that's generated, but you have a set of activities that you are responsible for. And it's not always clear in small business land because you're the owner and the marketer and the manager and the decision maker and the frontline employee and the technician, right? And the mechanic and the call center help and yada, 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 right? So you figured out generally a way to get all that stuff done. But in small business, once again, it's probably not all documented, right? A portion of the work you do by texting while you're laying in bed at night. And so when you describe to interested buyers how much time you spend in the business per week, right, everyone says, oh, I spend 10 to 20 hours a week, right? It's not a lot. You'll be fine, right? That's kind of completely ignoring the fact that, well, the bookkeeper is my aunt. And so I see my aunt every Sunday for dinner and we spend 5 minutes talking about the accounting on the side. And I just ignored that, right? And or, you know, once again, all the other kind of invisible work that gets done by an owner outside of regular business hours, what have you. Once again, it's back to what is the set of activities that it takes to run this business and what, you know, EBITDA or profit do you get in exchange for that, right? And how do you describe that to a buyer in a way that is compelling, right? That makes them feel comfortable that it's achievable. You can take this over. Like, A, there's always a balance between I've got a distinctive thing here going, and so this is why it's valuable, but It's not so distinctive that anybody else can't learn it. So, hey, buyer, this is learnable, right? Buy it, pay me a good price, and you're going to be successful. And so those are some of the trade-offs that we balance as business brokers in trying to close deals, essentially, right? Trying to find alignment between various stakeholders who have different sets of goals and targets.
And then, John, when you're working with a client and they come back to you and say, okay, I've got this business, it's worth $5 million, you know, it's earning $5 million a year, its net profit is $1 million, it's, you know, you work through these things and they come back to you and they say, okay, the numbers that the business broker says I can get for this is $4 million. There's one side of that coin that says, okay, is $4 million enough to reach your personal financial goals? Is that going to be enough that you're not going to run out of money? Then there's the other side of it that is that a good price for this business? How much do you get involved in that process as an advisor? And I know that, you know, that's an answer that may depend a little bit from one advisor to the next or one person to the next, is how much do you want to get into that? But for you, are you more focused on, is this figure enough to meet your financial goals? Or is this a fair value for the business based on my own, just maybe I'm not a business broker like Ryan is, but common sense kind of comes into it and says, yeah, wait a minute, you got a $5 million a year business and you're only going to get $3 million for it. That doesn't seem like a very good deal to me. How much do you get involved in that side of it, even from a high level?
I tend to look at, you know, there are several different ways to skin the cat on business valuation, depending on the quality of the business. EBITDA definitely is the most reliable, because truly the business buyer is going to be buying that stream of income, essentially, is what they're doing, right? And they're trying to weigh how much it's going to cost me in terms of labor, time, my time, whatever, to get that income, and how much do I want to pay for the privilege of being able to have that income down the line. Essentially a cap rate question. It's like, what's my return on my capital? And by the way, I also have a capital expense of my time, you know, and they're trying to factor all that in. And those variables are a little bit fungible. So EBITDA tends to be the one that drives that. But not all businesses look good from an EBITDA standpoint. But that doesn't mean they aren't necessarily sellable. And some businesses look great from an EBITDA standpoint, but you may not want to buy it because that trade-off of other potential costs may not be valid. So I do like to look at it. I would never say, well, gosh, you know, your business has $5 million in revenue and you're only going to get paid $3 or $4 million. So, you know, that's not a valuation. I always want to look at the numbers and see are the numbers substantiating something, you know, reasonable. And that's why we use numbers when we're valuing businesses. It's like, I think my business, which, you know, has $1 million in revenue, I think it's worth $10 million. That's great. But I can't validate that, you know, under any of the three major metrics that are available. So that's just pie in the sky. And I actually find it's not me that says it's not worth what that valuation is. It's usually the owner saying, well, my business is worth more. That $5 million business, I mean, saying, I should be able to get at least my revenue every year. I should be paid for that. It's like, all right, well, let's look at the numbers and see what the numbers are saying. Because essentially, you might think that's what it's worth, but somebody else has to be on the other side of that trade, right? They got to be willing to pay you that money. And that's where, you know, Ryan is talking about is like, we've got to find an alignment, because you can think it's worth $6 million, but if you can't find a buyer for $6 million, it's worth zero.
Yeah. At the end of the day, anything is worth what somebody else is willing to pay for it, right? And I think that's something that there's a lot of different things that can factor into it. You've got, is the business growing? Is it not growing? How important is the owner in this business? Because in a lot of situations, the owner is the business, right? And their reputation is what it's built upon. So just the owner being extracted from the business is going to devalue the business by itself. And that's a really inconvenient thing if you're the owner, right? But it is the reality of the situation. Your reputation is worth something, and that's now going to cost you.
Just to jump in there, Garrett, right, is that like if those are the cases, right, and I think, you know, putting together the three of our kind of, you know, perspectives is if John is, you know, as an advisor speaking with an owner who's 2 to 3 years away from an exit, right, and they are the business, right, then the conversations there need to be how can we reposition or, you know, reform the business so that you are not a key critical ingredient, right? You've got to remove yourself from operation, right? But once again, generally that is – requires layering, right? A management layer, right? It requires hiring some kind of manager who's going to perform the task that you're currently performing, and that will cost money, right? So that will impact your EBITDA. And this is once again, while all the classic cliches come to bear in, you know, business brokering and selling assets, like, time is money, right? You can either do it yourself or you can pay somebody to do it, right? And if you pay somebody to do it, then you have to manage them and trust that they're going to do it the right way, or, you know, what have you, or make good decisions versus doing it yourself, right? And so these are trade-offs that folks need to make, or at least think about.
And Ron, from your experience, I mean, John and I can sit down and crunch the numbers, and you can as well, and figure out what we think a business should be worth. My experience when I started trying to work with advisors on selling their business, and I feel like this is shifting just a little bit, hopefully, but at one point, every buyer that came to me thought that they could buy a business for 2 to 2.5 times revenue spread out over a 5-year revenue share agreement with almost nothing guaranteed. And then every advisor that came to me thought that they could sell their business for 4.5 times revenue, and 4 of that 4.5 was going to be guaranteed cash up front, maybe a little bit of a revenue share on the back side. So half of my job has been to educate both sides and bring them to the middle and say, okay, this is what's realistic here. How much of that goes on at the broader level of, okay, there is what my finance degree, my experience, my book, whatever, says it should be worth, but until I find a buyer willing to pay that for it, it's not really worth that. So how much of that goes into it at the broader level?
Sure. I'd say there's a fair amount of that, right? As I described before, the starting point with sellers, right? Sellers who reach out to brokers and say, hey, I'm thinking about selling my business. You know, how can you help me? Sometimes they have a number in their head. Sometimes they don't, right? So I would say it depends on the profile of the individual. Some people really are those, you know, quite frankly, I'm just going to call them the salt of the earth individuals that have just been cranking away at their business and, you know, they're making enough money to get by. They're probably not, you know, doing extremely well, but, you know, it's a profitable business. It's got, you know, a dozen or more employees, and they really don't know. And so that type, you know, that profile of person, right, it's a different conversation. It's a different set of expectations that you're setting with them versus, let's say, you know, the person that you described, right, has a little bit of maybe finance education, training, right, came into a business in some other avenue. Maybe this is their second or third rodeo, meaning they had a corporate office job, they got into owning a business, maybe this is their second one. So now they kind of feel like they know a lot. And so that's, hey, I know it's valued at X, and therefore I've got to get X, right? And that's a different profile. So it's a different set of topics that you have to talk about with them and reestablishing and resetting expectations. So the answer, of course, is it depends. And same thing with buyers, right? Buyers get educated quickly when they talk to a bank and a bank tells them how the world works, right? Buyers are like, I'm gonna give you this LOI where I don't pay anything up front, and SBA is gonna give me all this money, and, you know, and it's gonna have seller financing over 5 years, you know, and I'm gonna come in with my $10,000 because I saw a YouTube video or I listened to some other different podcast, right? And they said that was possible. And, you know, I'm here to tell you that, like, that's just not happening, okay? It might have happened somewhere in the world and somebody wrote it down and they're telling the same anecdotal story over and over. But, you know, interest rates in the U.S. are 8%, right? 7.75%, 8% currently since interest rates started to go up. SBA loans are prime plus 3.75, 3.75. That puts interest rates at 11%, right? And that's scary to a lot of people, but that's real. That's what it costs for money, for cash, right? In the money market. So those things dictate what's possible, right? Because you can say all you want and point to whatever websites and bullet points you want. Until a bank calls up the SBA and asks whether or not a loan's going to get approved and what the interest rate is. So that's what I try to do. I tell people up front, this is what I know, right? I build relationships with strategic partners like lenders, right? And banks and, you know, accountants and, you know, insurance brokers and all the folks who are service providers to small business owners. So that I speak with them regularly and understand how they're doing business, right? Understand what they're seeing in the market, hear their stories about deals that they tried, that they worked on, that either went through or didn't go through. And so that way I can have confidence when I set expectations with clients and tell them, hey, here's kind of how things go.
Yeah.
And by the way, you know, I've got this big book here, which is business valuations. And, you know, I use that plus my own, you know, research and experience to say, this is what the multiple is in this sector.
Yeah.
If you think you're a snowflake, fine, we can go and have those conversations with buyers, but quite frankly, we will get the feedback from the market, and the market will tell us whether or not what you're putting forward is a good deal or not.
Yeah. This is kind of a question for both of you. I'll start it with you, John. Business owner comes to you, we're going to start this process, they go through the process, and whether the numbers just aren't mathing out the way they want it, or they bring the number back to you and they believe Ryan's valuation and that that's all they're going to get, but it's just not enough for you, whatever the case may be, we pivot a little bit now. And now what we thought about might have been a sale or a potential selling my business conversation turns into a strategic consulting conversation, and that could go that direction with either of you, right? Do we want to bring in another partner? Do we want to raise some capital to grow the business or to bring on some folks to come in and help grow the business to make it? Maybe I need to hire somebody to take over that management side, but I don't really have the cash flow right now to pay for that, so I'm going to have to capitalize that, whatever the case may be. Talk a little bit about where, how you would take that conversation. I know, Ryan, you help with capital raises in those situations, so I don't know which one of you wants to take that question first. It's actually kind of a jump ball for whichever one of you thinks you can want to take a swing at it first, but and how often is that going to happen, right? Like, I wanted to sell my business, but now I've dug into it, and it turns out maybe I don't want to sell the business now that I learned what it's really worth or how much it's really going to go into it.
Yeah, so I think when and it kind of goes back to the original question and my original response, which is you have to understand there's more than one option to a business owner that's trying to exit their business, right? And what is that? What are those options? And maybe what they thought was the prime option, the best option, i.e. selling it, well, they go, well, that's not looking like such a great option anymore. And so we would go back and we're going to like, well, if you're going to want to go a different direction, you can go this route or you can go that route or you can, you know, you can bring on an associate and then they can start to be a manager. You still got to get back to that valuation though, because if you're bringing on an associate and you're going on a 7 to 10 year associate transfer, right, if someone's buying into the business, whatever that process is, you still got to have a valuation because they're essentially working to buy the business as opposed to just forking over cash, right? And there's still going to be a buyout at the end where you're going to get your retirement plan out of it. So it still kind of goes back to these hard numbers. The nice thing about that time, if a business owner comes to you and they say, I want to sell and I'm going to sell in 2 years, they usually come and say, I want to sell and I want to be done in a year. And I'm going, that's pretty ambitious, because just the reality of it is wherever you are, you know, if your valuation of your business in your head and all the numbers we put together, including finding a buyer, if that happens and it's perfect, it might happen in a year, but that's all the stars aligned and everything's great and wonderful. The reality is it takes time. It's not like, you know, going and buying a house. You visit a couple of homes and you go like, this is it. And they're ready to sell and bang, we're done. And it's a 30-day escrow and we're out the door, right? It is not like that, because each of these things is so unique. Even if their idea is, I want to sell and it's a year, the nice thing about if they have 3 years is now you have time to start letting those numbers, those first numbers that may not have been what they thought they should be, to start validating that, right, in their minds. It's like, we're looking at a bit, and you just don't, it doesn't validate the number you have in your head. And that number will move over time in having those conversations, whether it's with Ryan or me or you, Garrett, that number is going to move in their head if given enough time. Will it move in a month? No. If Ryan comes and says, here's all our valuations, we've done all our homework, here it is, this is what it really is worth, and their number is 5-6 million and Ryan's number is 4 million, it won't budge that distance in a week or a month, probably even 6 months. But over a couple of years facing that reality over and over again, and the numbers don't lie, and seeing how they play out over the next 6 months as the business does its thing, it's amazing how that number will shift.
Well, yeah. And just to add on to what John's saying, right, I agree with that, with all that you've said. And I think if I can get into a conversation with a business owner 2 to 3 years before they want to be done, like done, that is fantastic, right? Because if they're willing to do prep work 2 to 3 years in advance of when they plan to be out, right, there's a tremendous amount of opportunity there to make improvements, right? It could be, you know, something that's related to you know, as we come back to the business owner being critical, right, maybe they've got, you know, 80% of their revenue flowing through like three customers, right, and then a long tail of other small customers. And those three customers are a little bit relationship-based with the owner because they've been customers for 15 years and their kids went to high school together and yada, 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 right? What you really need to do in that scenario is you need to find a way to mitigate the risk of when the owner exits, will those three contracts persist, right? And or it might be, now we can start relationship handoffs, right, that take that to go over time so that whoever's on the receiving end is happy with who's stepping in to take over the owner, right, who's retiring or leaving. Or maybe it becomes, hey, you've got to get three more clients over the next 3 years to bring down that revenue concentration from 80% to 50%. Because any buyer that's going to buy this is just not going to feel comfortable and you're not going to get the price you're looking for. Right. And so once again, if you have time as a luxury to work on that over 2-3 years, that's fantastic. What I see generally is folks who come when they're done and they're like, hey, I just want to be done. Right. And then I start, you know, educating them about the process to set expectations, as I said. And the first thing is, by the way, you know, it takes on average about 7 or 8 months to sell a business that's priced less than $5 million. So that's just what the stats are, right? And above 5 million, it goes up to 12, 13 months. So just knowing these are the numbers. Yes, we can try to ram things through in order for things to go more quickly. That's going to have some trade-offs, right? It might come down to price. Who knows, right? And so that's expectation setting. And generally, they're like, oh, okay, I didn't know that. But, and you know, and as John was saying, there's a lot of analogies to real estate transactions, right? And even, you know, in the state of California, we are regulated by, business brokers are regulated by the California Department of Real Estate. You know, many of the reasons of that for non-discrimination, right? When you're putting things out on the market and advertising them for sale, but also with confidential information management, right? With EIN numbers, right? And tax returns of businesses, and staff employee personal information that may show up on pay stubs that have to be transferred to, you know, to prove income and employees, et cetera. So as John was saying, it's not standardized like an MLS listing in real estate where, quite frankly, 3-bedroom, 2-bath house.
And you have comps.
Yeah, you have comps. All the systems are up to date. Your roof is 5 years old. Your boiler is X. Your washer dryer is Y. You know, the bathroom was redone and it passed all inspection. That's almost a commodity, right? There are no commodity businesses because there are no standards behind the counter, right? And therefore, anything goes. And so due diligence is important, and every business is its own project.
So Garrett, I think one of the takeaways from this, if anybody's listening, you know, watching it and saying, what should I be getting from this? It's like, if you're a business owner, get the end of your business on your radar as soon as possible. More time is going to be more luxurious for you. You're going to get a better result. If you want to do something in 6 months to a year, I suppose it's doable. But to Ryan's point, it will come with a cost. And it probably most likely is going to come to a cost to that retirement plan. If you can do it in 3 years, in my experience, even that still comes with several costs because you just can't be strategic in those shorter time frames. You know, it's like, give yourself at least 5 years.
John, you beat me to my big finish though, dude. I was going to ask you both as the closing question, what percentage of people come to you to bring up the possibility of selling a business that have started that process on time versus they should have started it sooner?
Actually, I'd say it's been a pretty high percentage that are finding me, partly because of the networks that I'm using to get those people to come to me, coming from other advisors, CPAs, and the like. And those people are also advising them the same thing. It's like, well, you know, you're about 10 years away from you've had this business for 15 years, and, you know, what's your retirement plan? Well, I'm thinking, you know, when I'm 65 and they're 55, it's like they're going to be hearing from somebody, another advisor, and then they're saying, let's get it on the radar. Let's get John in here. Let's get the business broker. Let's get Ryan in there as well so that we're starting to talk about the valuation piece right at the early going so we can be as strategic as possible. So it's actually, for me, pretty high. When I'm out talking to business owners who don't have those advisors who are, you know, and those are the ones who tend to be like, hunting around and finding podcasts and broadcasts like this. They're trying to, you know, do the YouTube things like, well, so you know, tell me what to do. Those are the ones that, you know, hopefully, again, if there's one message, get it in your head. Think about it sooner than later. The sooner you think about it, the better the results are going to be for you, hands down.
That's right. I would echo what John says. I think my percentage is probably lower, though, because as John said, if the business owner is taking enough ownership, right, and planning, and they're already working with a financial advisor, right, they're probably more of the planner type. And so, you know, they're getting in front of these topics. But for my work, oftentimes, I'd say it's probably, it's like 10 to 15% of folks that approach me, you know, have more than a 12-month timeline in their head. Most of them are, quite frankly, a little bit burnt out, and they're kind of saying, hey, I'm throwing my hands up, you know, help me exit. And in those cases, you know, we're kind of moving as quickly as we can. But as John says, right, folks who come with a little bit more preparation and time, you know, it allows us more degrees of freedom for, you know, putting together the strategy, finding the right interested buyers, right, getting the best price for them, and all of the wraparound terms, right? Seller financing is a big term that is negotiable. The amount of transition time and transition support is still negotiable. And so all of that, you know, are topics that we can discuss.
Yeah, and I'd even like to kind of pile on that concept. If you're just a business owner, it doesn't do you any good as a business owner to force yourself to get to the point where you're putting your hands up in the air and saying, I'm done, right?
Right.
If you're starting to feel a little bit taxed by your business now and you're only in your 40s or 50s and you're thinking, I feel like I'm on the hamster wheel. I've been on this hamster wheel for 5 or 10 years and you're starting to wonder, well, how long will I have? Think about it. Just think about what that timetable might be and bring in an advisor then. Even if it's just a one-off, it's like, here's what's bugging me and here's what's doing, because we can address a lot of those pre-burnout issues before they are true burnout. Right.
That's right. I think the final point I'll add to that, John, is just that, you know, business owners are generally experts in their business, right, as they should be. And the activities and kind of, quite frankly, knowledge and experience that it takes to plan an exit, right, or financial plan, as John, you know, offers, are different. Right. So in other words, don't feel bad about asking for help and saying, hey, I'm thinking about XYZ. Let me talk to someone who's a professional in this area who deals with these topics regularly and therefore has, you know, experience, perspective to share, give you options, give you a thought partner, and help you plan accordingly, right? I think, like many things, if you plan ahead, you can probably be closer to achieving your goals than if you are in a hurry.
Yep.
I might have to make this a two-parter. Really enjoyed this conversation. Appreciate you both for the time to have.
You bet.
You are welcome. Thanks. Good to meet you both. And yeah, hope to cross paths again soon.
As always, anyone who would like to have a conversation with John, I encourage you to reach out to him through his website, altuswealth.com. Ryan, why don't you tell viewers, listeners, how they could reach out to you, any business owners out there who may be playing around with the possibility of this and wants to chat with somebody, how can they reach you?
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you so much. You guys can find me at my website, which is rdlconsultingllc.com. So that's my initials. You can find me there and book time. Happy to speak with you.